Thank you again. And I guess the best way for me to start this particular this talk is to know that when you go to the airport, they always ask you, are you carrying any item that belongs to somebody else? Well, I'm actually carrying item that belongs to somebody else because this was given to me to present as the individual could not come at the last minute. So forgive me. I know the TSA would not be so forgiving. But what Dr. Bishnoi wanted to do is that he's the individual who actually started the canola study in Alabama A&M way back in 1998 when he first began to take part in a national trial. And ever since then, he's had a series of graduate students who has done a tremendous amount of work in the area, along with some association with me, Dr. Rufina Ward, and Dr. Ramit Reddy. So what he put together and gave to me just the last minute to go through was some of the work that they were done and why they were doing it. Basically, it's almost as if it's a revision of everything that's been said here earlier about how when you're introducing a new crop in an area, all the concerns which must be addressed. And of course, we know that we had good climate to grow the crop. Its yield will be better than that when compared to the profit margin that you would get with wheat. The equipment and the various practices may not differ from much from what farmers are used to for wheat, and which was a major concern for farmers. Do they have to re-equip to do this crop? And we basically showed them that they did not have to re-equip to do this thing. And also to how does it fit within a cropping system that's already exist in the area, which is a heavily summer type of growing region with the winter being left fallow. But however, the winter is very, very, very conducive for winter canola. So the objective was, again, as I said, I'll be repeating what a lot of people have shown earlier, is to look at date of planting, seeding rates, these type of various components. And then, of course, some of the early work that we showed that we have respectable yield coming from these very early years from the national canola trial. We realized that, yes, this crop can do very well in our region. And at around the same time, we realized that the better planting date that we had was around October the 1st. But we established a planting window that's somewhere between September the 15th to October the 10th would be the best planting window. And we've been playing around with that window ever since then. And again, this is Dr. Bishnoi's baggages. So there's a very high, some of the work that, again, he looked at is the nitrogen and sulfur, as was talked about earlier today, and to actually see at which point where nitrogen and sulfur actually does give, at which level that these type of nutrient are most beneficial without having to go above the top. But as we realize, just as was said earlier today, nitrogen seemed to have a continuous response to the plant and not showing any kind of flat top. So we have to continue to play around to see where is it most beneficial for the farmer to stop adding any further nitrogen. But most of the work that we do, however, has to do with, we put nitrogen about 30 units in the fall and then an additional 100 unit split application in the spring. And one of the set of work that Dr. Bishnoi initiated was to look at these various types of rotation. And we know that very well, planting canola in succession like this is not recommended, but on an experimental basis, we figure we have to do it to be able to see what are the adverse response that you're going to have so we can actually convince local farmers that it's not a good idea to do the very short rotations. So with these type of rotations, we all the type of summer crop that are grown or sometime growing in the air in northern Alabama, corn, soybean, sorghum, so all, and then in the wintertime, wheat and canola. So, and some of the work what he sees is that when we look at some of the treatment, again, which treatment which provide a better yield, it was looking at also soybean and with canola, there seem to be some very good response and on both of the years that the student actually did this kind of experiment. Again, these are work that's been done over the years, which have been published in various places. They also look at the economic, basically of double cropping in the air, which is what the local farmers are extremely, extremely interested in, is that if they do plant this canola, will they be able to come back and plant their soybean or plant their cotton at the end? And then, and the most part, what they see is that there is a possibility that even with cotton, that you can get some kind of return in the area. The yield in returns, we're seeing that there is possible good returns in this type of rotation. Number one, cotton is a very low producing crop in the area. So as far as money is concerned, so a lot of farmers right now are trying to begin to adapt canola as a potential winter crop for the area. So some of the things that the parameters that Dr. Bishnoi had his student look at, again, as reported earlier, was number of pods, number of seeds, weight of the seeds, all these type of parameters and these different type of rotation, and to see which one of them would actually give as an indicator, can be used as an indicator as to which practice should be promoted further. Fertilization, of course, is one of major concern of any grower, because you don't want to put too much money in buying nitrogen or any other type of fertilizer and not to give you the proper outcome, the return on your investment. So we did do some study looking at nitrogen and nitrogen and sulfur at various ranges, at various levels. And again, these are some of the small plot studies that shows. And all these have been done with the early studies by Dr. Bishnoi were done with using Jetton as the standard cultivar, because when we first started working with canola in the area, Jetton seemed to have been the one cultivar that performed the better. But in recent years, of course, Jetton has begun to decline, while other better, more improved cultivars have taken the stage. And again, as we said earlier, is that as you keep adding nitrogen, the plant continues to increase in yield. So it's something that we have to continue to study to see exactly where the benefit exists. Likewise with sulfur, and I think it was a very good presentation earlier today, probably by Dr. Lynch, I believe, talking about the type of sulfur and the effect that it would have. And I think in our case, that we did not use ammonium sulfate. We simply used a pure sulfur compound. So there's 0060, I believe, 0060 in the formulation. So therefore, we did not compromised the nitrogen situation in this particular case. So what we did see again is that the nitrogen at the highest level continued to increase the yield, and some of the yield component, the specific components that we see that existed, and which was explained earlier today also. That's the same kind of result, I believe, Lance or somebody else reported, that you have more pods and some of the situation. So we see that nitrogen, again, at the highest level, with sulfur at the highest level, can influence the canola yield. But again, economic is the specific word that we should be concerned about. Now, one thing that Dr. Bishnoi also took time to look at was the yield, the profit margin compare these two crops. We probably have the most, maybe 100, 150,000 to 200,000 acres of wheat planted in the whole state of Alabama, for that matter. So we're trying to see, with wheat price being normally way down in, $3, except for this year, that there's this $6, $7 wheat. But the canola, definitely, we're trying to show local farmers that you can make a much better profit when you grow canola versus when you grow wheat, which is these two varieties that we use under different kind of, even with different kind of seed yield with the canola, we are going to get a better return on the canola than you would ever make with the wheat. Even this year with high price wheat, the canola would still fare much better than that particular case. As far as herbicide and the type of cultivation that we do, there was one work done by a graduate student looking at, if you do not apply any kind of pre-emergence or post-emergence type of herbicide, and then you come and you remove the weeds, at which stage that weed removal would have a beneficial aspect or an adverse condition. A very busy table in which he showed that if you remove it somewhere, there's a specific date he has here, which is around March. Say, if you remove the weed at that particular time, then you might still come up with a decent, well, in our case, that's not decent, when most of our yield is sometimes in the 3,000, 4,000 kilogram per hectare. So we definitely see that by not adding taking the proper precaution and weed control, that the yield can substantially take a hit. And I think that also was reported by someone from another location across the country. So these are the type of work that we've been engaged in. As just reported earlier about people doing work with forage, we also, Dr. Bishnoi and his students also look at forage situation where one-to-one canola planted with wheat. I guess it was Jack Brown who was talking about this, and different combination, two-to-one canola to wheat, three-to-one, and so on. And then, again, looking at these kind of thing, what he saw that is that the canola wheat, when planted one-to-one ratio, give very good fresh dry weight yield for forage. By itself, it give nice protein content and other type of nutritional, highly desirable nutritional for animal feed. So, and again, the harvesting of those kind of material for forage purposes, it seemed to be better within this type. And this, in our case, this is when the plant is actually at the bolting and early flowering stages in northern Alabama. And these are the kind of yield that it was able to get with one-to-one ratio of canola and wheat, and then wheat by comparing to canola by itself, and then wheat by itself. So we see that these are normally the better type of outcomes that was obtained in this type of forage work. So as far as other threats in the area, I guess the person who can speak with authority about this is sitting right here in front of me. This is Dr. Rufina Ward. She's our entomologist at Alabama A&M, not probably, but the only entomologist that's still working with insect and canola insect in the southeast. And one thing that we, as mentioned earlier by Jack Brown, this is our problem. This is the culprit here, the cabbage seed pod weevil. We've been able to see when it peaks during the summer, and then what kind of control method that Dr. Ward is implementing and to make sure that we can provide farmers with proper information. This, however, is something that we at Alabama A&M were the first one to report this on canola a number of years ago, the clover stem borer. When after harvesting the crop, we realized that there were tunnels in the stem. And as we, out of curiosity, as we go through these tunnels and we begin to notice these type of, so we did some extensive look into it and to identify that there was the clover stem borer and we did eventually got a grant to look at, to scrutinize the process a little bit more but then it never seemed to have materialized into something that we should concern with. But you will find this in certain area as you grow your crop. But one problem we're concerned with, actually, to tell you the truth, is Liger's bug, in the sense that it can be a problem, not necessarily as harsh on the canola, but on cotton. Because when we grow the canola, by the time we harvest the canola, people come around and plant cotton, then there's a good possibility that the canola can be a host and to send this thing to the cotton people, and I don't think they would like us at all. They already don't like the idea of canola in the area. So biodiesel, of course, blackleg is the number one problem, but we're not having much problem with it. We're not having serious problem with it, as we see in some of our, in our type of rotation, that even after 2 years coming back to the same field, we're not seeing any kind of a major problem. As we said, with cabbage seed pod weevil, we are looking at some kind of control by Fentrin that was applied by different stages by Dr. Ward. And we are doing some very good work in screening germplasm, creating some early maturing maturing type, which can be seen right here. This is one of our fields showing some early line which I've produced. And right now we've increasing these lines and begin to have them tested in different location. And one thing we know about them already that's a problem is that whereby most people worry about winter kill, we worry with this line, we worry about spring kill, meaning that you have a freeze that would come out in the spring, and since this thing flowers so early, so much earlier than anything else, it can wipe it out. We've already suffered one of such loss, but we're not giving up on it because we know those freeze only come once in a while. The same freeze that killed those also killed the wheat crop, so therefore we say, good. So it's not just a canola. Okay, so in that case, I will thank you. This is Dr. Bishnoi, who could not come here. This is Dr. Paul Raymer, as you know, who is an eminent canola person in the Southeast, who's done a lot of the work. I guess this was me in the earlier days with no white hair. So we've been working with canola in the area for a number of years. But we're trying to continue the process. And right now we're having more farmers growing the crop with very good yield, and we're hoping that we continue to expand the crop in our area. Thank you.